This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. After much discussion and pandemic delay, the Tokyo Summer Olympics begin this month. It's, of course, an exciting moment for the athletes. While the Olympics can be really fun to watch, they're also a stage in which discrepancies between the global haves and the global have-nots is in plain sight. And the politics of who gets to host the games tells a story, too. Dr. Stefan Szymański is a professor of sports management at the University of Michigan, and he's developed a virtual exhibition to explore the Olympic Games' history with respect to the city of Detroit. Information about the exhibition's on our website. Stefan Szymański, welcome to Stateside.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I was absolutely fascinated to hear about this, that Detroit formally bid to host the Olympics 7 times in modern history and expressed interest 2 additional times. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. How was this initially proposed?
Well, the idea seems to have come up in 1937, so really a very long time ago. And it was a few people, well-to-do citizens in Detroit decided that it would be a good idea to showcase the city. Remember, this was still the era of the Great Depression. Detroit was hit harder than almost any other city in America by the Great Depression. And so they wanted to do something that would raise the spirits of the city and bring it to national and global attention. And so they decided to start thinking about hosting the Olympic Games, and they approached the then chair of the US Olympic Committee, Avery Brundage, and asked what it would take to actually host the Games at some point in the future.
So how was the first bid received?
Well, the very first bid was a last minute affair. So what the games for 1940 were scheduled to take place in Tokyo, of all places.
That's crazy. Right after the war, right on the cusp of the war, I should say.
Right at the beginning of before the war had started in Europe, and following Japan's invasion of Manchuria and the international disapproval that sparked, Tokyo withdrew. So the last minute in 1939, they were looking for somewhere to host the 1940 Games. And that's where Detroit put its hands up and said, yep, we can do it. We're ready to host the Games in 1940. And they would have done so, but actually the Games were given to Helsinki in Finland. But nonetheless, in the summer of 1939, again, before war in Europe had actually broken out, there was a process of bidding for the 1944 Games. And Detroit put in a formal written bid and putting forward the city as the host for 1944. They didn't get that either. It was granted to London for 1944. But what they were promised was that if they got in line one day, if they waited for all the cities that had prior claims, Detroit would get it.
Yeah. And let's just remember, Detroit was a kind of a different sort of city in the American landscape at that time. Remind us what the context was. What was going on in Detroit? And how did this fit into the city's aspirations?
Well, I'd argue that in some ways, Detroit is the most important American city in the 20th century. It's certainly the city that represents the evolution of the United States better than almost anywhere else, in the sense that from the beginning of the 20th century, Detroit became the center of production of the motor car, and the automobile is the ultimate American product. And Detroit grew like Topsy in the first 20 years of the century as production expanded. Ford introduced the production line, and the motor car became the sort of iconic American product. So Detroit became an immensely rich city as well. In the 1920s, it was probably the richest city in the United States. But it was also, because it had grown so fast, it lacked certain basic infrastructures. It had grown in a very higgledy-piggledy way. And the problem really was building infrastructure that matched the status of the city. And one of the ideas behind hosting an Olympic Games was to actually develop that infrastructure, to create more recreational facilities for Detroiters that could be the legacy of Olympic buildings that they would construct.
Who were some of the players in the bid that year?
Well, the most important figure in all of this is a guy called Fred Matthai. So Fred Matthai was a graduate of the University of Michigan, 1914. He went to Detroit after he graduated and started a small business making metal tubes for the, again, developing car industry. And as was the case for many people in that period, he quickly became a multimillionaire, became immensely rich. His company, American Metal Products, went on to be a major player in Detroit industry. And so he, by the 1930s, he was interested in amateur athletics, as were many Detroiters. And Detroit was a big center for amateur athletics in the United States. And hence, that was where the interest in bidding for the Olympic Games came from. The idea of, again, using the wealth that had been generated from industry to put it into sport and recreation.
Well, admittedly, the Olympics and the bidding for them is the sort of thing where you kind of need to show up a few times to get your bid taken seriously. And as you told us, there was this tacit assurance given to Detroit that its number would be coming up shortly. So what were the next successive applications like in that post-war period?
Well, almost as soon as the Second World War ended in 1945, the International Olympic Committee set about bringing the Games back to life. In 1945-46, it was decided that the 1948 Games would go to London. And because of what London had suffered in the Blitz and because of its sort of symbolism as the last beacon of freedom in Europe, nobody was really going to argue with London's precedence for 1948. Mm-hmm. But very quickly afterwards, they started the bidding for the 1952 Games. And there, Detroit put in another formal bid. And we're once again told, you've got a good chance, but Helsinki has priority because they were already promised the 1940 Games. So the next bid came in 1949 for the 1956 Games. And Matthai and Detroit were absolutely confident they were going to win this. And really, they were ultimately let down in the process by the other American cities, particularly by Southern California, and really the unfairness of the way in which Avery Brundage, who was still the chair of the Olympic Committee, was soon to become president of the IOC, the way in which he treated Detroit. Now, Detroit was the official bidder for agreed by the U.S. Olympic Committee. But this was before the IOC had a rule saying only one city per country could apply. And so Los Angeles and Minneapolis said, we're going to put forward our bid. And so the whole thing descended into chaos with five potential cities bidding for the United States. And the rest of the IOC said, what are you jokers playing at? And they eventually just decided to give them to Melbourne in Australia.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Dr. Stefan Szymański. He's professor of sports management at the University of Michigan and is the curator of a new online exhibit dedicated to the Olympic Games and Detroit. Stefan, there's obviously a pile of insider politics that affected the process here, but there were changes. There was a lot going on in Detroit during these years as well. Did it have anything to do with the profiles of the various cities that were bidding at this time?
Well, Detroit faced really two or three major obstacles in bidding that really hung with them throughout the process, some of which were their fault and some of which weren't. So if we talk about the things that weren't Detroit's fault, in the post-war era, the United States was clearly the richest, most powerful nation on the planet. And that meant two things. Firstly, if other countries were going to come to an Olympics in the United States, it would be incredibly expensive for them. They wouldn't be able to afford very much. But if we think about what was Detroit's own faults, the biggest problem that Detroit had was that in all of these processes of bidding, it never built an Olympic stadium. It was always promising to build an Olympic stadium, but it never broke ground. And part of the reason for that is that there was always a very big debate and people found it very hard to agree on where an Olympic stadium should be. So one of the most popular choices was the State Fairgrounds, which is on the corner of Woodward and 8 Mile Road, right up on the northern edge of the city. And that would have been a very good location for the games. But there were rivals as well. A second rival choice would be to build a stadium around Wayne State University. And there were several plans for a Midtown Stadium, which could then be used by the university as an athletic facility, and also the idea that an Olympic Village could be used as student dormitories afterwards. And then the third location was the riverfront. So really from the 1950s, people started thinking about the development of the riverfront as the rail stockyards, which had been there for about the best part of 100 years, started to fall into disuse. So there was a good case for a riverfront stadium as well.
Yeah. You know, it's not exactly news that hosting an Olympics tends to come with a lot of debt and a lot of facilities that end up going unused. Do you think it's maybe to Detroit's credit that it maybe dodged a bullet with this?
So I'm an economist by profession, and I've long argued that overexpenditure on Olympic facilities is a waste of money. I've written academic papers on this subject. So count me a skeptic about the benefit of spending billions on infrastructure that isn't going to get used. However, there are some significant differences when we're talking about Detroit's bids in the 1950s and 60s. Remember, this is before the age when the Olympics became this huge global television event, and spending on facilities was still relatively modest. So, for example, when we were talking in about the bid for the Games in 1952 or 1956, the amount of money we're talking about in terms of building a stadium was somewhere between $10 and $20 million. So, and even allowing for inflation, that's not a huge amount. And remember that Detroit in the 1950s is still one of the wealthiest cities in the country. So it's not as if it couldn't have afforded this. And it wasn't as if it didn't need new infrastructure. Much of the tragedy of Detroit really is the failure to build the urban infrastructure that would have based on the wealth that had been generated in the city. That never really happened. And that has partly to do with the white flight that occurred in the 50s and 60s, the move to the suburbs, which was a general phenomenon in the United States, but was particularly acute in Detroit, and partly because Detroit was just not was not a beautiful city. It had never been beautified. The money had never been spent. And spending money on Olympic facilities that could have been reused might well have had a beneficial effect. And if you want to think of an example where that has worked, think about the Colosseum in Los Angeles built for the 1932 Games. That's an iconic piece of Olympic infrastructure that has plenty of use in the post-Olympic era. So it's not as if it couldn't have been done.
Stefan, it's not exactly a secret that the Olympic movement has not been even-handed in how it treats people of color, especially Black athletes. The Games have never been held in Africa. Recently, the American runner Sha'Carri Richardson was barred from competing in the 100-meter. Apparently, cannabis is legal in many states, but not at the Olympics. And Detroit's a majority Black city. Should the city have an Olympic future?
I would make a couple of points here. So firstly, Detroit actually has a remarkable number of facilities that are of Olympic standard. If you think about the redevelopment that's gone on in the downtown, you think about the spaces you've got at the Little Caesars Arena, Comerica Park, Ford Field, and the extraordinary scope for using places like the TCF Center, you could actually host a very compact and rather attractive games in Detroit using the river, using Belle Isle. It's not that much of a stretch to think of it without spending vast sums of money. But in terms of the question about race in Detroit, I think that is in some ways one of the big what ifs of Detroit's history. It has to do with the failure, the last big failure, which is the failure to win the right to host the 1968 Games, which was the bidding took place in 1963 and had a huge amount of backing, not least from President John Kennedy, who made a recorded speech to the IOC urging them to give the Olympics to Detroit. It had the strong backing of the city and a very progressive mayor, Jerome Kavanaugh, and the Republican governor of Michigan, one George Romney, who was, by today's Republican standards, an extremely progressive individual. And the failure of that bid always makes you wonder, what would have happened in 1967 in Detroit if they were 12 months away from hosting an Olympic Games, if all the work that was going on, the preparation, all this excitement that was going on? I don't want to argue that it would have necessarily avoided all of the problems, and wouldn't have abolished all of the issues that arose and all of the issues of segregation and discrimination, which were very much a reality of Detroit in the early 1960s. But it certainly couldn't have, I don't think it would have done any harm, and I think it could have helped in some ways. And perhaps the biggest failure in 1963, at the point where Detroit was not yet a majority Black city, but was well on the way to becoming a majority Black city, was the failure really to engage with the Black community. And that's actually a very striking example of this. One thing they did for the 63 bid was to organize an Olympic torch relay, starting in Los Angeles, which was the last place the Olympics had been held in the US at that time, and running all the way to Detroit. And on the last leg, an Olympic athlete handed the torch outside the city council building in downtown Detroit to Mayor Kavanaugh to symbolize the Olympics coming to the city. At that same time, at that very event, there was a protest by civil rights activists protesting the policies of segregation in the city. Because only the week before, the city council had been considering a decision to outlaw redlining in Detroit, the practice of restricting neighborhoods on racial grounds and restricting access to mortgages on racial grounds. And they failed to adopt that resolution. And so the practice continued until the civil rights laws were passed in 64 and 65. So in that sense, I mean, that sort of illustrates the missed opportunity and illustrates, had those organizing the bids engaged more fully with the Black community in the 1960s, then maybe the story of Detroit's Olympic bids would have been different. And maybe the story of racial tension in the city would also have been different.
Stefan Chemainsky is professor of sports management at the University of Michigan. You can look for his virtual exhibition online about Detroit and the Olympic Games. He's also the co-author of City of Champions, A History of Triumph and Defeat in Detroit. And if you're hungry for more, and there is more to this story, Stefan's taking part in Michigan Radio Issues in Ale on Tuesday, July 20th, with Morning Edition host Doug Tribou. Stefan, we're really looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on and talking to us about this by way of a preview.
Oh, well, thank you very much for giving me the chance.